everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Dr. Hernando Chavez, who is a therapist and a human sexuality professor, was last on this program in April, and we talked at that time about helping men overcome performance anxiety and a number of male issues. Today, we're going to focus on women. Lots of people have talked about over the years what really turns women on. Welcome back to this program, Dr. Hernando. It's so good to have you.
Hi, Dr. Diana. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to talking about women's pleasure today.
Good. And tell us a little bit about, before we start, a little bit about your practice, how people can reach you, and also I think you're still doing your professor job at Pepperdine, or maybe that's been on hold with COVID. Bring us up to current with you, Dr. Hernando.
Sure. Well, thank you for the opportunity to come on your show today. I'm really excited, and also thank you for allowing me to just sort of share a little bit about my practice and my work. I'm a sex therapist who's licensed in California, and I work out of Beverly Hills. My clients are typically split between folks who are working on sex, dating, relationship, and sexual concerns. So that could be something like ejaculatory, orgasmic, desire-related concerns. And then the other half of my practice are folks who are in erotic communities. So it could be folks that are kinky, fetishist, BDSM, non-monogamous, sex workers, folks that are have alternative lifestyles. And so I work with, different communities as well as the LGBTQ communities. And then for my teaching, I also teach graduate students sex therapy courses at Pepperdine for, sort of budding therapists to try to plant some seeds of sex positivity within their future work with clients.
So such important work, Hernando. And I think I need to have you back in a few months to talk about the kink community, because I really don't work with that community very much, and you're a specialist in it. So in the near future, we'll talk about that, because you said about half your practice comes out of the kink community.
There's a great number of people that are kinky that are sort of, ever since 50 Shades came out, I think a lot more folks have kind of explored the desire. There was maybe a smaller sort of segment of the population, but once it became more mainstream and maybe more discussed socially, I think you found more people interested and curious.
Yes, of course. And actually, I've talked some about that with our mutual friend and colleague, Dr. Ava Cadell. And I talked also some about that with Dr. Charlie Glickman. But I'm due again, and you're exactly the right person. But for this show, we're going to talk about what really turns women on. And, of course, the answer to that question has been the subject of countless books and articles offering lots of strategies and seduction techniques and how to bet a woman and keep her coming back for more, all that sort of thing. I really believe, and I would like your reaction to this, that women love incredible sex just as much as men do. But there are probably not quite a few men, many men anyway, who don't know how to really pleasure a woman sexually so that it isn't just plain old boring sex as opposed to mind-blowing sex. Do you think that there's some truth to that, that women really love incredible sex just as much as men do? So do you think that's true, that women love incredible sex just as much as men do? Do you think there's some truth to that?
I think that there is a myth that has been perpetuated for centuries that women are less sexual or even non-sexual. And we are just starting with the advent of sex research ever since the days of Albert Kinsey in the 1930s and 40s, up until researchers today, for example, folks at the Kinsey Institute, that we are now discovering that people, and I'll say men, women, trans folks, all folks of all genders and identities, all have sexual energy and all have sexual desires. for me, it's oftentimes been about what kind of upbringings have we been socialized to be in that sometimes inhibit some of our natural sexual energy to be both felt, expressed, and also nourished. You look at things like religiosity or conservative upbringings or traditional households or sex negativity that can sometimes inhibit people from learning the connection and developing a strong relationship with pleasure or with their bodies or with something like masturbation. I mean, many of the females that I've had as clients, when I do assessments, will talk about either the shame that they felt with touching their bodies or the negative sexual discourse that they were getting, the messages from both peers and society and also parents and families around sex and their bodies and, you know, everything from don't touch yourself and masturbate to, you know, sort of some of the religious dogma about, you know, it being something that God doesn't want for people, maybe even sending us to hell. And there's even also experiences where people will be shamed. And then also we have these messages in society, such as the encouragement of purity, you know, culture, like the idea of keeping virginity as a way to create more social value, more sort of, you know, desire for partners to want, you know, to be with people. And these have all been messages that have really inhibited, I think, that natural sexual desire that women have, which, as we all know, when we find women afforded the opportunity to not be, you know, handcuffed by these social constructs, women can be extremely sexual, extremely horny, extremely sort of desirous, and when they are allowed to, and they fight for that empowerment to regain and recapture that sort of sexual self.
I like the way you put it, to recapture that sexual self. I moved to Seattle, well, the end of this month it'll be 13 years ago, but before that I worked at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center, and I remember a patient there in that medical setting, we called them patients, not clients, who was raised a Catholic and she was about 40 and was a practicing, active Catholic, not a lapsed one. And so the only way she masturbated as a teenager and then through her adulthood was to lie on her stomach on the carpet and rock. Mm-hmm. And it's not very partner compatible, but it was look ma no hands, I'm not touching myself. So it fit into her Catholic beliefs. And sometimes a part of our sex therapy work, Dr. Hernando, is sex education. And I have found that that's been especially true for the Indian clients mm-hmm. that I work with that, you know, are often brought over on an H-1 visa to work for Microsoft or Amazon. I'm in Seattle, and I think Los Angeles has its share, but probably more San Francisco. So the arranged marriages that I've often seen have been quite disastrous, where on the wedding night they come together for the first time, and the woman often turns up with vaginismus because she's so fearful, and sometimes the man has erectile dysfunction because he's also has so much fear. And so sex education is really an important part, and in this case is suggesting using my little hand puppet. I've got one of those vulva hand puppets to talk about the clitoris. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about, because we're in terms of really turning a woman on. The man really needs to get to know the woman's clitoris. But let's back up a little bit and talk about foreplay. And you have a theory about foreplay. Can you share that with us, Hernando?
Well, it lines up very well with what you just brought up, which is this idea of sex education and lack of sex education, that many of us have not been given, you know, education or exposure or ever having done research or processed what it means to be sexual and also to explore our bodies and also to understand other people's bodies. And I'm a big believer that the more education and research and podcasts and books that we read, I mean, just really sort of gaining a firm sort of understanding and footing about bodies and foreplay and sexuality, the more we're going to reduce anxiety. And then when we get into those experiences, we're going to feel a lot more confident and competent and comfortable. And hopefully we can reduce some of those things like sexual anxiety or shame, or, you know, some of the things that will oftentimes become roadblocks or inhibitors to us experiencing pleasure and enjoying, you know, the bodies that we're being sexual with. One of the books that I really love in terms of foreplay is a book called The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay. You know, it's a wonderful book because it really does directly address, you know, this idea of foreplay. I find that many times books will have a chapter on it, but this is now a full book with techniques and strategies for, you know, for being sexual. It's written by Dr. Jessica O'Reilly and also Dr. Marla Renee Stewart, and I've just found a lot of clients benefiting from both learning about it, and then they apply some of that knowledge with their partners, and they start, you know, encouraging sort of that body exploration, that touch, that massage, that learning. But I also encourage folks to do that exploration on your own. That many times we, unless we know our bodies, how are we going to be able to communicate with our partners about what feels good to us if we have not yet discovered that on our own? So to me, it's a combination of individual sort of exploration and also partnered and relational exploration during sex. And together, I think we can find, you know, erogenous zones, which erogenous zones are areas of heightened sensitivity within our body that produce pleasure. And there are primary erogenous zones and secondary erogenous zones. And the primary ones are kind of what we would imagine would be the areas of pleasure and sensitivity, like genitals or nipples. But there are also secondary erogenous zones that people feel a lot of sensory sort of enhancement that can help with pleasure and even reaching orgasm. For example, the inner thigh, the neck, certain areas of the back. You know, there are a number of areas that people don't realize are filled with nerve endings and filled with, you know, sort of pleasure. But if we don't explore them, we'll never get to know that those exist on our bodies.
That is so true. The secondary erogenous zones that for many people are never explored. And that's why I gave a whole chapter in my book, Love in the Time of Corona, to reducing stress through touch and doing the sensate focus exercises, which I renamed in the book, it's not original, but full body caressing exercises. Mm-hmm. So in stage one and two, giving and receiving massages that don't allow intercourse, it seems to really work for people to discover, because many people just haven't slowed down and discovered these secondary erogenous zones. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the inner thigh, the neck, a lot of places that bend, like the inner behind the knees, the inner arm, you know, in front of the elbow. As I talk, I'm bending my arm. I know nobody can see it, but so all of these. But you're right. Exploring on your own for about 7 years when I was in Palo Alto, I co-led two women's groups with Dr. Maria Flaherty, and she's no longer in practice, but she was just it's such a phenomenal mentor for me and sex therapist. And so we co-led these women's groups every Wednesday for about 7 years. And the women's groups were composed of all women who'd had sexual trauma in their lives. And so they all of them had trouble reaching orgasm. So, of course, we suggested self-pleasuring for the very reasons that you describe, that we have to get to know our own bodies first and find out what really turns us on. And now there are so many wonderful sex toys, too, that can be an add-on. I think it can be useful for a woman to first try with her fingers, take time and not go directly for her genitals, maybe work up to it, maybe read some erotica. Women tend to respond to the written form a little better than to visuals that we might see in ethical pornography or that sort of thing, right? But to read some erotica and to spend some time, maybe before that, spend some time in the bathtub touching, in the shower touching, and then moving on in a relaxed way, playing music, setting the scene, all of those things for a good masturbation session that will be illuminating and fun, and maybe get, and maybe she can get to orgasm on her own. And then the next step after she is comfortable with that is showing her partner. And then it's a problem if she has a partner. But then it can be a problem that she's embarrassed to do that. But it's actually the best way, if you're lucky enough to have a partner, to do a little show and tell. This is how I like to touch myself. Mm-hmm. And then you watch how he likes to touch himself. And this all can work because it slows you down. You see how your partner self-pleasures, and it can be a turn-on, too. So I'm all for that. Self-discovery.
Well said.
Well, thank you. I think one of the first things that men can really do that helps a woman a lot is to pay attention. I think that pure, non-distracted attention is so seductive and really quite affirming. Because when your partner tells you his or her thoughts, feelings, desires, or just things that happened that day, really listen. So many people are not really listening in their close relationships. Another way to pay attention is to do nice things for your love, showing that you're thinking about him or her. So you might bring coffee in the morning to your mate. And the list can go on and on and on, because often positive behaviors precede attitude change. That's the basis of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, do you have any additions to the whole idea of paying attention?
Well, I love that advice, that paying attention is an important area for us to look at within ourselves, within our partners, and also within our relationships. And I think we have to look at the paying attention model from both a sexual and a non-sexual perspective. I've been a big believer that our relationship satisfaction is correlated and linked to our sexual satisfaction. And it's not always going to be exactly sort of contingent upon each other, but there is an intersection that most people will experience, and also research will also back up, that it's not easy for us to feel erotic or feel sexual with people when we feel neglected, or we feel that we aren't desired, or we feel that there's resentment or there's anger or hostility or some type of, you know, struggle that the relationship is experiencing. It may be hard for us to feel connected or attached or bonded and then get into that intimate space. I've also found
that's right. And because, you know, desire, of course, starts in the mind. And I just wanted to bring in an example of that. Mm-hmm. I think there's a reason that women buy romance novels by the millions, that women love to dream of the white knight who will sweep them off their feet in a whirlwind of romance. Mm-hmm. So I remember, this is sort of a joke, but I think it's mildly amusing. Some of the women in my women's sexuality groups bought into this whole thing about someday my prince will come, and so will I. It's all tied in with romance and reaching orgasm. But the thrill of getting a man's complete and undivided attention is a huge turn-on for most women. So, as you say, in and out of the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, look us in the eyes and really listen, as I've already said, as we share our thoughts and our feelings and our desires, or maybe just tell you about our day. really listen.
Yeah.
But, looking in the eyes, do you have any other additions to this whole business of paying attention inside, inside and outside the bedroom?
Sure. Well, I think each person individually is going to have their own roadmap to either feeling desired or feeling satiated within the relationship. And I think it's important for us as partners to be mindful and observant about what is meaningful and what helps a person feel desired or acknowledged or validated in their relationship. That for some, it may be about, having a tidy home. For others, it may be about spending lots of quality time together. For some, it may be about joining through laughter or joining through communication and sort of opening up and being transparent and vulnerable about who we are and our hopes, dreams, fears, and pleasures. If we can pay attention to our partner's needs, can we also lean into those needs in a way that helps our relationships feel satiated and then open that door for us to experience something like vulnerability, which can be a wonderfully erotic sort of component within sexual relationships? That I've often had people ask, well, what do women want? And I often will say, well, it's a complex question with a lot of different answers that's individually specific for each person. But most women want to feel desired. They want to feel nurtured and cared for. They want to feel like they're a priority. So you've got to ask yourself, what would then create that opportunity to feel that way? And I think the same goes for in the bedroom. To pay attention in the bedroom, we look at both the verbal and the nonverbal cues that people will express. What areas of their body are pleasurable? What types of desire or foreplay do they enjoy? What types of pre-foreplay, even outside of the bedroom, do people sort of respond to? Many people will enjoy having sort of the eroticism being sort of experienced throughout the relationship, even if their bodies aren't naked or if they're not in like the bed. For example, imagine, let's say in the mornings when you're leaving for work that you go downstairs and you leave some lingerie on the couch and you leave a note that says, please have this on at 7 o'clock in the bedroom and I'll meet you there. And you get home at about 6:45, you go up, you meet your partner inside of the bedroom, and for the entire day, you have created this sort of seed that you have planted of eroticism, this seed that sort of is hopefully sprouting, that you can also text message a picture of the lingerie, or you can sort of say something sexy that sort of plants a seed of what you would like to experience with them, later on that evening. This is all ways that we can create sort of eroticism and desire psychologically throughout the day when we're not even together, when we might be at different jobs.
I love that idea. And, planting the seed and letting the sexuality or the ideas kind of simmer mm-hmm. all day. And this is certainly a way to seduce her mind, because women are like crock pots. We take time to warm up. So planning ahead and doing the sexy text message and maybe telling her how soft and smooth her skin is, or that you've been thinking about the smell of her hair, or that you can't wait to taste her. Because if you seduce her mind, she'll want you to seduce her body later on. So these are some pretty good tips. I hope our listening audience is taking some notes. Because they're very good tips. I wanted to, besides paying attention, I wanted to address taking your time, because I think this is essential for female desire and responsiveness. I think when we're touched, we've talked about this before, and lots of people know about it. Our bodies release our very own cuddle chemical, oxytocin, mm-hmm. and oxytocin fosters feelings of love and comfort and relaxation. So that means the more we're touched, the more we want to be touched. And touching can be so important. Expand on touching, all kinds of touching, if you will, Dr. Hernando.
Sure, sure. With taking our time, I mean, so many people, when they talk about their sex life, they will say that it feels either rushed or it doesn't feel like they've created the opportunity to really explore and be curious about each other's bodies. You know, when you look at the average time for sexual experiences, you know, it's different amongst different sort of communities, but in heterosexual communities, oftentimes it's estimated anywhere from 8 to 11 minutes total for the time for sexual experiences, which for many people might feel short. And we have reasons for that.
Oh, yeah.
That there are children present, you know, that we put to bed and we only have a small amount of time, or there may be roommates. And, you know, we can go on and on about work and about responsibilities and all these things that sort of, you know, can inhibit our ability to block out an hour, you know, block out 2 hours for us to experience, you know, the joys and the pleasures of our bodies. For touch, I've often encouraged people to consider yourself to be kind of like an explorer, like somebody who's exploring a new land, to take things slowly and soft and sensually, to offer a massage and give yourself adequate time to explore every, you know, parts of their body. For a lot of people, what they may sort of incorporate some sort of traditional tantric techniques as well, too, that can also be incorporated with eye gazing or cuddling exercises or bodies rubbing up against each other. I've actually seen a surge in people experiencing and trying out neuromassage, where you can essentially put sort of like a lube on your body and you kind of just slide against each other. And it's a very intimate experience with just your body sort of almost feeling like they're at one with that sort of erotic foreplay experience. Taking your time, I think, also means maybe taking some time outside of the bed.
Wait a minute. Hernando, what did you call that, the neuro massage? You used another word. I didn't quite hear it.
It's called Nuru massage, N-U-R-U, and it's a specific type of a massage where you're rubbing bodies up against each other. So it's sort of like, imagine the slickness of two people's bodies that have some lube in between them, and it can feel really erotic because you can move into cracks and crevices and between legs and between arms and back to back, front to back and sort of front to front. I mean, it can be a very erotic and seductive and sensual experience to have our bodies so sort of in tune with each other.
And so couples can do this using regular lube or maybe coconut oil or what? Because this is not new to me, but I haven't heard it called neuro massage.
Yeah.
N-U-R-O, right?
There's some different ways people will do it. So I'm a person that doesn't like to make too much of a mess because then I have to clean it up.
I've actually
purchased a sheet that goes over my bed. It's like a rubber sheet it's waterproof.
Right.
Sort of, so you put that over, which for me allows it to just be quickly sort of like, you know, taken off and you can wash that very easily. So if you put something like that down that can protect your bed, and then they do sell Neuro Lube, which is a bit of a thicker and longer lasting type of lube. It kind of resembles a bit of like a hybrid water-based and silicone lube, but it's typically thicker, so it stays on our body. And then people will just lather themselves up and then just, you know, get in bed and sort of just start grinding and sort of rubbing and sort of moving against each other. It feels incredibly erotic. The one piece of advice I'd encourage people is it can get cold, so you might want to turn up the heat a little bit because you don't have clothes on, blankets on, and the parts of the body that get exposed to the air, sometimes it just can get a little chilly. So maybe have like a nice warm environment. If you set some candles, if you have some music in the background, you could have just a wonderful slip and slide of pleasure and eroticism that it's not going to... it can be a long-lasting experience of just getting to know each other's body and just enjoying the moment.
You know, in the early 90s, I went to Japan several times to do research on the guy geishas in the love clubs. They're the men satisfying the women. And when they were on their off-hour, I interviewed them and gave them a questionnaire that I had translated into Japanese. On their off-hours, they reported that a lot of times the soap ladies would come from the sex district in Tokyo is where these soap ladies, so they put the men on these rubber sheets, and then there's a lot of soap and water and slipping and sliding. And so these women would often come to the Japanese hosts, the Club AI for Love, after work hours because they wanted some attention and not necessarily mm-hmm. slipping and sliding, but maybe some other kind of attention. But it's so it's the Japanese, of course, right now and for some time, their birth rate's very low. But this whole slipping and sliding in their sex district with the so-called soap ladies was very popular. So mm-hmm. I think this might come from well, you know, a lot of, you can't reinvent a lot of these things. They've been around for a while. But I appreciate your bringing it up for the for this program. And but so get your rubber sheet, get your lube, and maybe the neuro. It's N-U-R-O, right? This is new to me. I love learning new things.
Yes.
N-U-R-O, right?
And you're absolutely right. It originated in Kawasaki, Japan, and it's a very common form of erotic massage. So you probably did witness the neuro experience, you know, in its birthplace.
Okay. Yeah. So it did originate in Japan. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. So let's go on to getting good at cunnilingus. I think that men need to be reminded that only about 25% of women can achieve orgasm through intercourse alone. So oral sex performed skillfully really can be a surefire route to ecstasy for lots of women. And notice I said skillfully, because I think there's an art and a science to cunnilingus. So let's talk about the science first, and please we'll share this conversation. The clitoris has about 6,000 to 8,000 nerve endings, nerve fibers. And, of course, the clit's only purpose is for pleasure. And, you know, with some of my clients, and I have a drawing to further show this, but only about a quarter of the clitoris is visible outside the body. And there's the internal female erectile network, all comprised of erectile tissue, which is the same erectile kind of tissue that men have in their penises. And so these legs extend and under the outer labia, and then there are two big wads of engorgeable erogenous tissue called vestibular bulbs. Mm-hmm. And when there's some light munching on the labia as part of the foreplay, after the woman's pretty excited, those vestibular bulbs can fill up and help with her arousal. And a lot of people don't know about the vestibular bulbs. They're mm-hmm. they're pretty amazing. Do you know about vestibular bulbs?
I do. That's part of the teaching I'll do is around anatomy, and then also how to pleasure using our anatomy, which I think a lot of folks haven't learned about both.
Yeah.
With the legs of the clitoris, you know, sort of those roots of the clitoris that you're describing that are underneath the surface, I've often encouraged clients and students to think of it like we do our plants. You know, do you water the leaves of the plants? Do you water the bulb of the rose? Or do you water the roots in order to keep that plant nourished and healthy and thriving? The same, we all would answer that we water the roots. And the same goes for our bodies in terms of our genitalia. When we start massaging, licking, sucking, focusing on sort of the roots of the clitoris, you're also going to find that blood flow surging to that area of the body. The more blood flow we have, we know that with erection, obviously that's very important, but we also realize that blood flow for vulvas can also increase stimulation because the blood awakens the nerve endings. So you're actually bringing in more pleasure as you are focusing on these areas. So part of our foreplay, I believe, is bringing, you know, ways to bring blood to these primary erogenous zones to help with added stimulation.
Oh, yes, and of course you would know about this, and I'm so glad you're teaching it, because I didn't know about vestibular bulbs until maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that. Somehow in my graduate school, which was 40 years ago, they didn't talk about that. Maybe they didn't know everything about it, but I'm so glad you're teaching it. And so we talked about cunnilingus, the science of it, and then the art of it. So you want to take a stab at that one?
Sure.
The art of it, yes, because I have something to contribute. But I so appreciate, Hernando, your male point of view here, and that you're such an amazing sex therapist and professor of sexuality. So the art of oral sex on a woman.
Well, you know, to go back to the education piece, I want to at least plug that you can also educate yourself as well, too, both by listening to a podcast like Dr. Diana's, and also there are books on guides to cunnilingus and sort of oral sex. I also recommend videos, and we haven't talked yet about videos also, that there is a lot of media that has been created. Dr. David Cadell, who's brought up earlier, also has a video line of different sexual sort of education techniques, and they also do talk about cunnilingus. Jessica Drake also has another line, her Wicked Guide to Sex also talks about this and can be very valuable for us to witness and see these things happening. Many people learn from the experiential observation, so that's one thing we can do. There's another book as well, too, that called Come As You Are, which I find to be one of the best books on the market for female sexuality, written by Dr. Emily Nagoski, that talks about a wide range of areas but also adds aspects of pleasure. For cunnilingus, what I have found to be most effective in my own personal life and also just with experience is you need to talk to your partners, that you've got to ask
them
and discover more about their specific desires or needs, because I have found there are some clitorises that like circular motions. There are some clitorises that like sort of up and down painting motion. There are some clitorises that like suction, almost like you're sort of like sucking and sort of pulling on their clitoris with your mouth and that suction experience. There are some vulvas that prefer more labial and sort of like a full-bodied experience where they want sort of a more multivulvular kind of stimulation. There are some people that like a finger inside, maybe two fingers. There are some people that do not want any fingers inside. And some folks might want maybe dual stimulation, like clitoral sort of licking in a certain way that they have shared with you. And maybe they also enjoy touching or pressure on their anus or on their perineum, which is the taint area in between the vagina and the anus. You know, so many ways that our body experiences pleasure, it's impossible for us to either assume what a person wants or likes and also to think that it's a one-size-fits-all experience. I have heard, you know, some people say, well, you should, like, paint the ABCs with your tongue on their bodies. And I've often found that that advice hasn't really bode true, and most people report that it's not as effective as you think, because a lot of vulvas and a lot of partners, they want consistency. They want you to find the right sort of stroke, the right lick, the right sort of suction, the right sort of pressure, the right sort of amount of saliva, and then they want you to stay in that sort of, you know, sort of range. So that they can close their eyes, they can get into the body, into the sensation, into the experience. But if you're bouncing around from, you know, 5, 6, 7 different techniques and rotating every, you know, 15 or 20 seconds, you're going to find that that may also affect the mental sort of concentration and also the experience of getting into that pleasure for the person receiving.
Absolutely. And that's very, very good advice, wanting the consistency. I think that a skilled lover really syncs up, and when he's going down on a woman, this can be a great time to do it because he pays attention to the woman's breath and her pelvic thrusts, and he follows her lead, and he listens to her vocalizations, because there may be a pattern, and so you can match, the man can match the movements to that rhythm. And that can apply both to oral sex going down on a woman and, of course, intercourse, too. Mm-hmm. And the syncing up. With intercourse, rather than the old in and out, you know, the man can try rotating his hips. It'll make for a different kind of clitoral stimulation, and also for some men, the absence of thrusting will help them last longer. You call it, Hernando, you call it groove and grind. Mm-hmm. Expand on grooving and grinding, if you will.
Well, you know, if we're talking about intercourse, you know, the idea of penetration, going in and out, you know, that intercourse experience, if we're being honest about pleasure, it is most pleasurable for the penis, you know, or if a person maybe is experiencing internal, you know, G-spot stimulation, or they really get off on the thrusting experience of inside the vagina, some may also experience that pleasure, you know, to a similar degree. But for the most part, the in and out intercourse will be more of a penis-centric pleasure. If most vulvas benefit from clitoral pleasure, think about every time you pull that penis out, it's removing any pressure or stimulation away from the clitoris. So it is, you're kind of becoming inconsistent with that constant stimulation of the clitoris. What I encourage people to do is to groove and grind. Place your body and your pelvic up against your partner's pelvis. Put that pressure up against their clitoris. And now sort of imagine your pelvic grinding up against their clitoris. You can do it in sort of a rotating manner where you're sort of moving your hips sort of in like a salsa dancing kind of experience. But with the mindset of creating some circular movements that can also be pleasurable for the penis, because you're moving the penis inside of the vagina and it's sort of a painting all around the walls of the vagina. And there's a little bit of sort of, you can still pull your butt back a little bit and sort of grind as you're sort of doing this circular pelvic thrust. But you're keeping the pressure on the clitoris. You're keeping that pleasure there. Now, some people will like to put some lube on the clitoris so that the bodies can really feel sort of slickness against it. There's even lubrications that have cooling and warming sort of additives that can also increase stimulation, that can make something like that really pleasurable. But most people will find, especially clitoris owners, that to not have that intercourse experience of stimulation, pulling out, loss of stimulation, and going, you know, that sort of routine, that they'll find a lot more pleasure with maybe that grind and that consistent experience within the vulva.
Such good advice, Dr. Hernando.
One more thing, too, as well.
Please, I'm all ears.
If you have concerns about early ejaculation as well, too, the thrusting also can add to that sensory experience, and then some people will last less time. So if you want to elongate that experience of taking time and pleasure, this can also help with, you know, lasting longer as well.
To not be thrusting just in and out all the time, yes. To change it up a bit. Some men also report that if the woman is on top, he can last longer, or am I mistaken about that?
It depends on the individual. Let's consider both the physical stimulation and the psychological stimulation. So I've had people say, when my partner's on top and I'm so attracted to their breast, or they're in reverse cowgirl and they're on top of me and I'm seeing their butt, that is so psychologically turn on that it actually makes them come quicker. But you'll also hear people say, I like when my partner's on top because I can last longer, because they're doing their own movement, their own grind, their own sort of pelvic thrusting. And it doesn't have that same stimulation on the penis that sometimes makes people come quicker. You also have the relaxation of the penis owner's body, which will typically create less muscular tension, helps us last longer, and also helps us with erection as well. So if I have people struggling with erectile concerns, I might encourage them to be in positions that produce the least amount of muscular tension. So if you're in missionary position, for example, you're using your arms to support your body. You've got your chest, your core, your arms, everything is sort of constricted. And if you think about the physiological definition of orgasm, it's the release of muscular tension in rhythmic contractions. So if you create more tension in your body, you're actually facilitating orgasm coming sooner, because that's the body's mechanism to release that. So I encourage people to lay on their back and allow sort of a relaxed body, which you and I both know that the more we can relax the body, the more we can get into the breath, the more we can sort of create a more mindful experience. It's not only beneficial for pleasure, but it also is beneficial for some of our sexual concerns around orgasm, ejaculation, and an erection.
Very, very good advice. But because a lot of women do struggle with orgasm, and so creating tension, laying on your back, relaxing, breathing, being mindful. I think that women are typically awfully good at multitasking a little bit more than men, and it could be because women have a bigger corpus callosum, the connecting tissue between the right and left hemispheres. And maybe that's because if we have a baby and we're having sex, we have to be able to also listen for the baby to cry. Mm-hmm. But the problem is a lot of women don't have babies anymore, and they're still multitasking, and they're not staying in the moment. And mm-hmm. So I encourage women who really would like to reach orgasm to come back to center if they find they're having distracted thoughts. Maybe see those thoughts on a moving conveyor coming out of their brains away, and then come back to center. If we look at it from a Zen meditation point of view, we can talk about quieting the monkey mind, quieting those little monkeys out on that branch trying to distract you and get your attention, and making faces. So quiet the monkeys down and come back to center. How is it feeling to have your lover stimulating you the way he is or she is? So it can be a good thing.
Yeah.
I just came across this, and it was a study done in Korea, and this is about not forgetting the feet. So we're moving from the genitals down to the feet, which is important, in this study, I found that couples who exchanged foot massages twice a week had fewer arguments and communicated better than less touchy couples. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the part of the brain that processes sensory input for the feet is right next to the part that processes mm-hmm. genital stimulation. Mm-hmm. Once again, our brains are working here, and we've got to know a little. I mean, you talk about understanding anatomy. That includes the brain and what the brain is doing, and I think that's fascinating. And we should not be playing. We should not be forgetting the feet. I often encourage my couples to do foot massages. They can, they can take turns while they watch TV, sitting on the couch, and that's great foreplay. Do you like foot massages, Hernando?
Oh, I think that, to me, it's a part of the novelty of an experience that we have within the body, that if our curiosity, our creativity, and our imagination can bring into our experience and our existence, that I wonder, that research that you brought up, which is really fascinating, how much of that is also intertwined with not just the physical touch of the feet and the sensory experience, but also the mental experience. The idea of being nurtured and cared for, the idea of attachment and bonding and closeness that something that is intimate like a foot massage can bring. If we all remember, watching Pulp Fiction, we know how intimate a foot massage can be, based on what the movie brought up. But I do find that is an example of erogenous zone exploration and discovery. And if you think about the body, our sexual pleasures is rooted in an area called the pudendal nerve. That the pudendal nerve is this nerve that goes throughout the body, that goes up into our brain, that is related to orgasm and sexual activity and also pleasure and sensitivity. And that nerve system, if you think of it like as a tree trunk, has branches, and those branches come out in different areas of the body. For each person's body, they're going to have different branches. So for some, the branch goes out to the foot. For some, the branches that's most stimulating might come out to the belly button or to the inner thigh. Of course, the clitoris and the nipples in certain areas are also present. But all of these areas of stimulation all come back to this pudendal nerve that, when it gets stimulated and goes up to the brain, enhances the experience of pleasure and can really bring on either orgasm or even very powerful orgasm.
Or bring on, what was the last one, what kind of orgasm?
I just said, to bring on an orgasm or even a more powerful orgasm.
Powerful. That was the word I missed. Powerful. Okay. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you brought up the pudendal nerve because that's such an important part of our anatomy. And when it's compromised, that nerve, we can have if there's injury, then that can lead to paralysis. Is that correct?
You know, any nerve damage that happens in, let's say, like the spinal cord region, you know, can potentially have effect on tissue and muscles and even paralysis, as you mentioned. Most specifically, mm-hmm. that pudendal, because it's so closely tied to pleasure, sensation, and orgasm, that damage to that region typically can have a pretty profound effect on our ability to experience pleasure and orgasm, which, you know, for anybody who's ever gone through something like that, it's something that's painful, but also something we have to work towards learning to accept, which is that our bodies may change. And sometimes our acceptance of the shifts in our bodies are part of the process of life. And we do have a grieving process if that does happen, that everybody, you know, hopefully can try to process, but also maybe discover new or different ways to experience joy or bliss.
These are very important matters, and you talk about bodies changing and there has to be some grieving. That's all very much tied in with aging and sexuality, mm-hmm. and realizing that our bodies at 55 may not be the body's responsiveness that we had at 25, although it could be better because we know our bodies more and we know that we need to warm up and not just get right to the right to intercourse that we need the foreplay and slowing down and adding some spice to the relationship. You know, I think it's interesting that according to brain research, dopamine is produced. Now, dopamine, for those listening, is the hormone of arousal, and it needs novelty, and that's one reason that a lot of new relationships are so hot is that it's all new. But mm-hmm. if we're anticipating hot sex, we can get dopamine. The anticipation of good sex. So yeah. thinking about it. Your idea earlier about leaving the lingerie out and leaving a note. This is all part of anticipation and getting dopamine in your system even before you come together naked.
Yeah. You know, the what you brought up earlier about paying attention and taking your time, I've also encouraged people to take time outside of the relationship and create space for you to lean into creativity and imagination. That imagine if you took just 30 minutes a week to think about ways that you and your partner can have novelty and creativity and imaginative types of eroticism, desire building, or sex. Most people don't do 30 minutes in a year of thinking about that. But imagine if we created space for us to think about how can I create some turn on or how can I create something that's kind of fun and pleasurable. Now, that idea about the lingerie, you can come up with ways that might line up with your partner's feeling of desire or feeling of sort of, you know, planting those seeds. And maybe it is about, you know, having like a Naked Fridays. Maybe it is about, you know, being creative and texting your partner to, you know, come home without any panties on. Maybe it's about you doing something and saying, tonight I'm going to give you an erotic massage, or I'm going to give you the lap dance when you're a guy who maybe isn't typically the person who's, you know, using that sort of eroticism as a way to seduce. Get creative, but also create the space for yourself to think about the creativity, because most people, it's not a process that they've leaned into enough, which is tending to our relationships and to our sexual needs.
Oh, this is really good stuff, Hernando. It's so true that I really like that idea of taking about 30 minutes a week to think about how to make your sexual life hotter, more creative, and you're creating a space for yourself and your partner to have a better sexual experience. And it's one way to keep. Yes.
Oh, sorry about that. I thought you. Please continue.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were finishing there. My apologies. I was just going to say, imagine if you took those 30 minutes and instead of taking 30 minutes to look for a new restaurant, which is still valuable and important, take those 30 minutes and look for a new sex toy or some type of new experience of pleasure or novelty to then create some of that sexual, erotic, bonding, attachment, energy and pleasure connection.
Yes. Absolutely. We were going to talk about sex toys, but we're pretty close to the end, and that requires, I've had whole shows on it. But erotic toys for sure are ways that grown-ups can play. And, the 30 minutes that you're talking about per week is, I think one of the ingredients should be that just a reminder that sex is play. It's adult play. And that's why sex toys can be so much fun and why, in my opinion, guys should get over if they're intimidated by the toys, they need to get over it because they can make friends with the toy. The toy doesn't get tired. It can bring so much more excitement to the woman, the right kind of toy. Mm-hmm. So, sex toys are fun. And they add excitement and variety and can expand the sexual repertoire. So, look, there I was talking about toys when I said I wouldn't because there wasn't enough time. But we do what we can do. Do you have any kind of a parting thought for us on this show today on what women really want?
Well, I think that what women want, and there's a wide variety of answers. It's going to be specific for each woman themselves. But I do find that most people want to experience pleasure. Most people want to reduce the stress and anxiety in their life. Most people want to feel close and connected, and that can be through communication, non-sexual intimacy, and also, of course, sexual intimacy. Tend to your relationships. Lean into your pleasure, and don't make it 20th on the list of priorities. Try to make it, a top 5 priority in your life. I know that there are children. I know that there are responsibilities and work and mortgages, but we have one life to live. We might as well make it a pleasurable one.
Oh, it's so true. And a lot of us during COVID have reflected and reprioritized things. And, having pleasure in your life, lots of pleasure, can make all the difference. And so I think that's something that we can kind of close with. Just we can have so much more fun if we can really focus on the pleasure and add some spice and have talks about what would really make us be turned on more. All about communication, isn't it, Dr. Hernando?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the music. I'm going to have you back for sure. And thank you so much, Dr. Hernando Chavez. We'll do this again in a few months.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Hey, everybody. Have some fun out there. Yes. Happy feet. Da-da-da, happy feet. Oh.